The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Football at 4. Here's The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
On the text line on a No Offense Friday, no offense, Tyler.
Uh-oh.
I was going to text you earlier, but your wife wanted me to buy my old letter jacket for you. Enjoy, buddy.
I'm telling you, we would have problems. That would be a significant problem for me. And don't mention my wife. Just don't. When you text in, just don't mention my wife. Don't do that.
Okay.
But it's no offense, so I guess it's okay.
No,
right?
He did say no offense.
Yeah, I guess he said no offense. So I forgive him.
No offense, you both sound insecure about your marriages.
Mm.
Wow, really?
Well, if that, I guess, color me insecure, if I don't want to wear another man's name on my back that my wife bought for me, I guess that makes me insecure.
Well, on your back would be one thing, because you could wear an Arenado shirt. You know, it's the name on a back.
I mean,
that's we're talking about it's monogrammed on the front.
We're not talking about a professional athlete. We're talking about a friend.
Yeah, just a dude. Oh my god.
No offense, Mike, but that's weird.
Yeah, no offense. Okay, rivalries. Do rivalries still matter? It's an interesting concept. You know, it was great having Mike Shanahan on. Couple things to listen for. If you hear a Red Hot Chili Pepper song, and you're the fourth caller, you can win some tickets. So win them before you can buy them. This is our final day to do that. So that'll happen sometime relatively soon. Also, at 5 o'clock, we will replay, if you missed it, the interview we had with Mike Shanahan, which was terrific. And we did ask him, do you hate the Raiders? And he said yes.
We got a very definitive response.
He said yes.
That was the best.
And okay. Are there still rivalries in the NFL right now?
Man.
Do they matter? Do they exist?
I don't know if there are. Seriously. I don't know if there's a single rivalry in the NFL. It's so hard for a rivalry to take place because it takes years, right? And it takes legacy players. So it takes a guy like John Elway being on the same team for so long that he goes up against the same team over and over and over. And then you've got experiences that turn into rivalries. Yeah, fans probably still care about the Las Vegas Raiders. I seriously doubt if there's a single player in that locker room that this game means anything extra to them. You know what games mean extra to them? Well, all divisional games do, but I promise you that Chiefs game, that's the one that they want. That's the one that they need. We got to get that one off our back. Right. We haven't beat the Chiefs in forever. So inside the locker room, that's who they're thinking of. But honestly, dude, name a true rivalry in the NFL.
Well, let's just talk about what... I'll get there, but let's just define what I think a rivalry has to be.
All right.
I think a rivalry has to be amongst two good teams where it does go relatively equally back and forth.
I agree.
Because without that, you just got CUCSU.
Thank you. Boom. Rim shot. I thought that was worth a rim shot.
Sword. Yeah. Poser buff here. I'm going to beat Arizona.
Let's go, baby. This is our opportunity this weekend. My daughter, she got some CU bus boots. She put them on last night. She's like, Daddy, can we go to the game this weekend? I'm like, well.
Yes.
You know what? This might be the one game.
I tell you
this
what.
This might be the one opportunity. We should think long and hard about going to the game this weekend, honey.
I mean, they had walk-on tryouts in the middle of the season in Arizona.
Things are not going well down
no.
there.
No.
Buffs are looking great.
All right. So you have to have two good teams that it goes back and forth and the games actually matter, in my opinion, for a real rivalry.
Yeah.
So who does that? So the Giants and the Jets? No.
Well, the Patriots were our most recent rival. Right. So they were the ones that when we were good, they were good. You'd go back and forth. We had some big time moments that showed up.
Yeah. But does a region matter? Like, does that have to be part of the rivalry too?
Well, something's got to be on the line. Right. So I don't think it's so much the region, but because they're divisional foes.
Yeah.
That matters.
Right.
I don't know, dude. I'm just telling you the nature of this league with these players. They're all going to play on 4 to 7 teams. Right.
I'll give you one. I'll give you one.
Okay.
And it breaks the rules a little bit because one of the teams hasn't been as good as the other. But I did hear Aaron Rodgers the other day talk about if he were to go and be a free agent, would he ever consider the Bears? It was kind of a snarky question.
No, that's not a rivalry.
Packers-Bears isn't a rivalry?
Heck no.
Really?
The Packers dominate them. What are you talking about? That's not a rivalry. I played
but
in Washington.
They really hate each other, though.
I was part of the most historical rivalry in the entire NFL, Washington versus the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And that game, it was just another game to us. Why? Well, because all the players, they're mercenaries. They come in. They don't know the history of their team. They don't know what's going on in that city. They don't know what happened 2 years ago, yet alone 10 years ago. So the only way that a rivalry happens is when you've got the same guys on the team for a long time, mm-hmm. and you've got two good teams, right? So I think what you get more than anything inside the NFL is you get personal rivalries. You get matchups. You get Von Miller versus Mitchell Shorts. That was a rivalry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those two guys, Von looked at that like, hey, I got to win this one. This one means something extra to me.
All right. I think you get that with quarterbacks. I know they don't go, definitely against each other.
I'll tell you.
But you could feel a little vibe with, like, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes.
I don't feel anything there. I really don't.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. I don't feel anything. But I'll tell you, last quarterbacks that I felt a true rivalry with, you should probably think of it. It should take you 2 seconds.
Well, I would think about Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers and Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
That was a rivalry.
Yeah,
that was awesome. They hated each other.
Right. You know what's
they were running up and down the sidelines yelling at one another.
Right.
I mean, that was awesome.
You know what was funny about that rivalry? Initially, we all supported Jay. Then I realized, no, Philip was right.
I mean, seriously, in the long run, Philip Rivers is absolutely that guy that he's a turd unless he's your turd. Like, if he's your quarterback, you would love him.
Yeah. That was a good one. I'm trying to think of others that would be sort of along those lines. Guys that, yeah, I think there's got to be an element of real hate.
Oh, here's a good one on the text line. Here's a good one.
What's that?
Ravens Steelers, because there's longevity everywhere. It's two good organizations. It's two coaches that have been there forever. They're both winning franchises, and Mike Tomlin didn't want to talk about it. When Mike Tomlin was asked about John Harbaugh, he didn't want to talk about it.
That said a million. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Pretty good. And they've both been really good for a long time. That's a pretty good one. You would think Ravens, the Browns would have one with the Ravens. Well, maybe they do.
Oh, not quite so bad.
Browns are
so
bad. Right.
It's got to be two historically good teams.
No, you're right.
You need legends. That's what it takes to create a rivalry.
Tyler, speaking out of turn, Green Bay and Bears are rivals. JB in Chicago.
No, for the fan base. I'm talking about inside the building. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the guys that are working there, the guys that are playing on that field. It's weird. You don't know the guys. You barely know your own teammates. Seriously. Sometimes you meet a dude on Wednesday and you're playing right next to him on Sunday.
All right. Well, we're up for suggestions. Up for suggestions here on this gorgeous Friday, 303-713-1043. So no offense Friday as well. In terms of honoring Mike Shanahan, Tyler's got some more stories. That'll be great. You could pass along some of your memories as well. This is The Drive on the Fan.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver's sports station. 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Speaking of rivalries, a lot of people said, Aqib and Crabtree.
That's a good one. Personal. Individuals.
It was the Tlaib Harry Douglas thing that got this soundbite.
It was a dirty play by a sorry player. He don't do nothing. He come to the game, don't catch no passes. He come to the game to chop guys from the back. And he got the same agent as me. So when I see his in Atlanta, I'm going to beat his. It don't matter how I win. He tried to do something dirty, so that's why I'm going to beat his.
That might be the single greatest soundbite in the history of the NFL. Right there. That's it.
That is so great.
Oh, you got to love Aqib, man.
You do got to love Aqib. He's doing great, by the way, too. People are like pointing out Manning Brady, but I don't think they hated each other. I think they're like pretty good pals.
No, but it was two legends that went toe-to-toe, and absolutely, that was an important game. I think that's close.
Somebody's best rivalry, Mike versus D-Mac. No offense, Mike is winning. How? How is that possible? Did you watch Jalen Hurts last night?
Yeah, buddy, I did.
Yeah, how'd he do?
Well, you know, he turns it on in the fourth quarter. He always does.
His completion percentage is a tick higher than Tim Tebow's.
I'm telling you, Jalen Hurts has been a whole lot better this year than what anybody thought he was going
to
be.
Well, fine, they should move on to Gardner Minshew if they want to win games.
Not true.
They're fire sailing it. They just traded Zach Ertz.
I mean, that's not the right move. Look, that I know what you're trying to say. I don't want to get caught up in a dumb argument here. Jalen Hurts is actually showing a lot of sign of life.
Okay.
A lot.
All right. The big story on Jalen Hurts today is, like, he's not very good, but...
I got it. All right. I got it.
Right. No, Mike's doing...
He sucks.
Mike's doing great.
I'm telling you, the dude, you see it in the fourth quarter, and then you understand why they want to see it through with him.
Tyler, you're so wrong about Green Bay-Chicago. This is a very true rivalry, at least for the Packers players. Green Bay-Minnesota is the same.
This subject got them got the fan base riled up, I know, because fans will never, ever, ever be able to think in the same way that players do because they've got so much built into their fandom. They've been there for so long, and they've got so much more invested, honestly, from an emotional standpoint in their team than players ever will. Fans, without a doubt, have more emotion tied into their team than players because players are mercenaries. They come, they go, they come for the paycheck, they get cut, they get traded, they don't know the history. So when people get all fired up on the text line, they're right because they're fans and they're from that city. So people say, Tyler, you've never been to Chicago. I get it. I understand that the fan base feels that way. What I'm talking about is inside the building.
People are funny with their snark. Jags, Jets, they battle for the first overall pick every year. There you go.
Okay.
A lot of people are pointing out the Avs and the Red Wings. Well, that
was great.
It was, but then they changed conferences, and it just really, you didn't see them as often, and the only time that you could match up with them is in the Stanley Cup Finals. And
it was two great teams that had a lot on the line when they met up, and there was violence. When there's violence, that usually leads towards a great rivalry.
Here's the crazy thing about hockey, and it's a little tricky, too, because you would see guys fight each other, and you would assume they, you know, hate each other's guts. Not necessarily. It depends if that was their job on the team. Now, some of it is you know, totally legit. They really do, like, hate each other.
You know, when I was in college, there would absolutely be rivals, and you would hate everybody from that university. Absolutely hated everything that represents the University of Nebraska. To this day, don't let red in the household, right? Other than this red shirt I've got on. but you've got these historical matchups that go on, and you've got feelings that are personal, that are associated towards that university and towards the individuals.
Yeah.
To the point that, like, when the game's over, you might shake somebody's hand, but you're not talking to them. You're not hanging out with them.
Mm-hmm.
You get the heck off that field, and you either celebrate on their logo, you're jumping up and down on their logo, or you get the hell out of Dodge. When you watched an NFL game, when was the last time you watched an NFL rivalry game where you didn't see the players being chummy after the game, exchanging jerseys and taking photos together?
Couldn't tell you. By the way, a sneaky, really, really funny video. I think I saw Josina Anderson post it. Is Vita Vea trying to take his shirt off to exchange it?
Dude.
And he just could not get his shirt off. And they were interviewing somebody else, and he was just in the background.
So,
I mean,
I don't think anybody understands
the fat guy struggle.
How hard it is. The most challenging part of any NFL game is taking your pads off. Putting them on is very hard, but not quite as challenging as taking them off. Those jerseys that you wear, they're not skin tight. They're rubber bands that are put on you because they don't want to have any extra articles of clothing to be able to hold on to latch on to, right?
Yeah,
after the game, it's a line. You get in the locker room, there's a literal line with the equipment managers where guys line up in single line fashion to go up to the equipment manager and so that they'll help take it off. The equipment managers are yanking on them. They're tugging on them. Sometimes it takes two or three guys. It's an unbelievable sight.
All right. Hey, No Fish Friday. Let's fire it up. Don't forget the fire up will happen, and then a special intro for Mike Shanahan and our Mike Shanahan interview from earlier, which is great, where Mike does say he still, to this day, hates the Raiders. So you can hear that. Plus, if you hear a Red Hot Chili Pepper song, well, then, my man, you could possibly win yourself some Red Hot Chili Peppers tickets. It's time for the Broncos injury report presented by Spine One. Ronald Darby is back. He's going to be playing. He's going to be activated. He has been activated. He's going to be in action. To what degree he'll have an impact and where that'll impact the rest of the Broncos defense, we'll dig into that for sure. Your injury report presented by Spine One, your one-stop shop for neck, back, and joint pain. It's Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Call a four right now. Barry, tickets to go see Red Hot Chili Peppers with Heyman and Power Field, Mile High. Saturday, July 23rd. That's next year. But tickets don't go on sale until, well, they went on sale today at 10. So, you still win them. You could have bought them a little bit earlier, but what, are you going to turn your nose at some free tickets? No, 303-713-1043. Good luck on that. So, no offense Friday, no offense on the text line, but it's no surprise with a head coach, offensive coordinator, and quarterback that barely have a pulse that we start games slow. They need more oomph. Mm. Ken in Aurora.
This is an amazing stat. We heard Zach Pye talking about it today, that it's been nearly 2 years since the Denver Broncos have scored on their first drive. That's insane. Goodness gracious. Do you want to talk about from playing from behind? Give yourself an opportunity, right? Especially knowing who you are as an offense, knowing that you're never going to be built to play from behind. You don't have the quarterback that you want to just line them up in shotgun and let them deal for 30 straight passes. You got to get so much better with your first 15, and that's what bothers me the most with Pat Shurmur, is that's your opportunity for you to really shine. Like that's what the first 15 plays, you look at it. I heard Nate Jackson suggest that the Pat Shurmur should toss out his first 15, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Seriously, what are you talking about? That's when I want my offensive coordinator to have his very best stuff, and that's when I judge him. That's when I know if we're in for a good game or a bad game, because that's your best stuff. You've been thinking about it all week long. You planned it. You prepared it. You went through it in your mind. And when you come out and it looks boring and it looks stale and it doesn't work, I get concerned because I say, well, what do you have left if that was your best stuff?
How often did it feel like in your NFL career you guys would score on the first drive?
Well, not as much as you want. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's commonplace that you always score on the
ballpark,
first drive.
Ballpark it, percentage-wise-ish.
Maybe 40%.
Still, you know, pretty good.
And totally guessing here. I have no idea how to actually know the actual answer to that, but I do know that a lot of times you didn't score. But the majority of the time, you had an opportunity because it's your best stuff, mm-hmm. right? So you're not going to score on 40% of your drives, you know, over the course of the season, but you will score. Like, if you just think about it logically, that's when we're best prepared. That's our best stuff. That's literally what we game plan all week long for, and our coaches know their deficiencies. They've got a game plan for it.
So out of 16 games, 6 or 7 games a year, you'd sure. score on that first drive.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, 3 points, sure. Absolutely.
Well, there's got to be something to work in with what you got, even if you didn't choose in the first place. We've been talking a lot about Mike Shanahan today. We'll replay that interview in a little bit. By the way, JT the Brick will be on with us in about 15 minutes or so, so you want to stick around for that. But Mike didn't want RG3, right?
Yeah, you know, one of the most important things as a coach is the ability to coach to your personnel, right? You got to know your personnel. You got to know their strengths. You got to know their weaknesses. And you got to know how to develop a game plan for those guys. Sometimes the system is so good that you can plug and play. And generally speaking, the Mike Shanahan system was so good that you could plug and play any running back. You could plug and play just about any quarterback. But when you get stuck in a situation like we had, where the owners go out and they make a decision for the organization that you're drafting Robert Griffin, well, guess what? He's not a traditional West Coast offense. He's not a pocket passer. He's not going to play on rhythm. There's nothing about his game that is designed to the West Coast offense. So Mike Shanahan, what did he do? I look back on that, and he probably views that as one of the most frustrating periods of his career. I look at it like that was one of the most successful moments of his entire career. He got told a quarterback that he was going to have to play. The owner drafted that guy for him, and that quarterback was not designed for his system. So what did Mike do? Well, he did do a little bit of a little middle finger to the owner by drafting Kirk Cousins, but he still had to design a plan for Robert Griffin.
Mm.
And what did he do? He changed everything. He changed who he was.
Mm.
Mike Shanahan, of all coaches, has always been known as a system guy. You're going to get the West Coast offense. You're going to get the wide zone runs. You're going to get the nakeds. You're going to get the bootlegs. Everybody knows what it is, and it's going to be the same every single year. Well, when we got Robert, he knew that that wasn't going to work. We had to go all in on the stuff that Robert did well. So what did we do? We spent the entire offseason studying Baylor film. That's what we did. We didn't know how to run RPO. We didn't know. There wasn't any film in the NFL to watch. You don't watch college film when you're in the NFL. You watch your peers. But there wasn't any. Mm. Nobody ran it. Mm. We had to go watch Baylor film. We had to go watch college film. We had college coaches come in and advise us. Wow. And give us their opinion on how to run this, how to defend it even. And we redesigned everything to the degree that during the preseason that year, this is ultimate Shanahan move. Like they're all about just the deception, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want anybody to know who they're drafting. Right. They don't want anybody to know what their game plans are, when they're going to play Trey Lance. That preseason, you know what we did? Every single practice, all we worked on was RPO stuff, building an offense around it. In preseason, we ran the West Coast Mike Shanahan offense.
Dang.
You would have thought, based off preseason, we didn't even have an RPO in the offense. Didn't run it one single time. And then, what do? We came out, very first game of the year, played the New Orleans Saints in the Superdome, and we went in a all-out attack, and it was a system that they'd never seen. We put up 40 points because they had no clue what was hitting them. We threw one drop-back pass that entire game. My point of this story, that was fun, but my point of the story is that as a coach, know your personnel, design a system that is going to work for your personnel.
Are they doing that for Teddy Bridgewater right now?
No. They were the first 3 weeks, and they've gotten away from it. Now we're going back to who Pat Shurmur is. Now we're going back to going into three wide, going into shotgun, going into launching the ball all over the place, trying to run the ball out of 11 personnel. Look at the differences in just the personnel usage in the first 3 weeks, and that will tell you that they've gone away from it. So, yeah, they had a game plan that works well for Teddy, but they've abandoned the ship.
So what should it look like? What does work best for Teddy? Who is Teddy Bridgewater? I guess that's the question you have to answer first.
So he's a manager. You know that. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. A lot of great quarterbacks are managers. Tom Brady is a manager. That's who he is. He dinks and dunks all the way down the field. But you got to put him in positions where he doesn't have to overcompensate for a previous mistake. So what Teddy Bridgewater is, he's a guy that needs to rely on consistency. We need to go from 1st and 10 to 2nd and 6, from 2nd and 6 to 3rd and 4.
Mm.
And everything that you call needs to come with that thought process of making 3rd down easy. That's what everything should be about, making 3rd down easy. And when you do it, guess what? He's a pretty good manager.
I think they got to get Noah Fant more involved somehow, but I don't know.
It's been surprising, right? been really, really surprising how uninvolved Noah Fant has been.
It's the worst matchup for every defense. You know, the Cardinals lost their tight end. Was it Max something? I'm forgetting his name. Williams, maybe. But
I'm sorry, who?
The Cardinals lost their who is their guy? Max Williams, yeah, okay. And that's why they traded for Zach Ertz.
Mm-hmm.
So
that happened today, by the way.
Right. Yeah. Kyler Murray's got like an 80% completion rate to his tight end. It's like the easiest throw to make. I mean, there's a bunch of quarterbacks that are up in the 80s in terms of completion percentage to their tight end. It's a good throw. It's an easy throw.
Tight ends are usually a quarterback's best friend.
Right. So, and you got Noah Fant. I'm out there at practice today. Tight ends are the freak shows of all the freak shows. They're the biggest guys who are the kind of crazy athletes out there. You're just not supposed to be that athletic at that size.
Hey, you know what? That's a great point. And that's something that Pat Shurmur is not doing well right now. He's not coaching to his personnel. Say what you want about Rich Scangarello, but when he got Noah Fant, he was going to get that guy involved.
Yeah,
you could make fun of the first play that he ever had with the with Noah Fant reverse play.
Right.
But what was he doing? He was trying to get the ball inside the hands of a dude that he viewed was a playmaker. Are we doing that?
I don't know. And let me give you something real simple. Of course, Noah Fant should be involved. This Salbert guy, dude, like 3 passes a game. He was great in preseason.
He was.
He is a monster, man. This dude's a dude.
He's not like an athletic monster. He's not going to be a yards after the catch type of guy.
No, but he's, you just
but
said,
he's reliable.
Are we going to get to second and six?
Right.
Are we going to get to third and two?
Right.
Salbert, he could take you right there. He's not going to get you 40 yards down the field, but I mean, can he get you 3 or 4 yards on a pretty simple play? Sure. Ah, no, use your guys, man. And you got guys. You really do. It'll be interesting to see defensively what the Broncos do, because as Mike Kliss was telling us, it did look today like Darby's in, Fuller's out. Let's chew on that a tad. JT the Brick will join us. Come on now. What's things like out there in the desert for the Raiders? We'll find out next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Denver's sports station. 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
JT the Brick will join us in a little bit to preview the Raiders game. He's Raiders Nation guy. You know, he's awesome. We love JT. So
JT the Brick.
Looking forward to him. Sad note. Broncos great Otis Armstrong passed away.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and at age 70, so our condolences. And I know it's a big reunion weekend, too, so I'm sure he'll be in the thoughts of a lot of people. And big doings with Mike Shanahan, so just want to throw that out there.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it. I was unaware of that. I'm sure that, you know, that will be a topic of conversation at Mike's house tomorrow, where we'll have just about any Bronco that's ever played, I think, sure, has been invited to this party. So I'm glad you brought it up, and condolences to his family.
Darby will be playing, Ronald Darby. He'll definitely be playing. And it looked like today, as Mike Kliss was talking about, he's playing in, will play in place of Fuller.
Interesting. Okay.
Does that make the defense better, worse, same? No factor.
I hope it makes you better. I mean, in theory, Fuller's been a weak link on this football team. He's been by far the most disappointing free agent that you signed. You signed him to be your number one corner. When we had Mike on the show earlier, I referred to Kyle as the number one free agent. I wasn't referring to in order of when they were signed. I was referring to he's your number one corner on this team. Darby was not signed to be the number one. Fuller was, right? And it's been very, very disappointing that Kyle Fuller has had at least a play or three in every single game that he has gotten exposed. He's just not playing at the same level. It happens. Guys get older. They don't play at the same level that they once did. Unfortunately, this has happened a few years in a row now for the Broncos with AJ Boye, Kyle Fuller, and here we are. You've got a situation. So let's hope that Darby will play at a very high level. If he does, then yes, he does make your team better. Why? Because Patrick Surtain has been a good football player. Hasn't been a difference maker, but he's been good. Have you had moments where you've been frustrated with Patrick Surtain? One or two. Not many, though, right? So let's get Darby out there. Let's get the weakest link off. I like it, and I like the fact that we are being nimble.
When are we going to hear Tyler's letter and Mike's response?
Oh, I like it. I can tell you right now
if
you want.
Let's just put a pin on that.
Sure.
Let's get to it after we talk to JT, but let's get to it after we talk to JT. JT the Brick, what are your official duties, JT, these days in Raiders Nation? What of the myriad of jobs that you've done over the year are you currently doing connected to the Raiders?
I'm the host of the pre and post game. I'm a TV host of the coaches show.
Oh, and okay.
I pretty much do everything you could possibly do. So there's a few things I do, but it's been an interesting week, guys. Good to be on with you.
Well, I guess let's start with that. How was the coach's show last week? Did you talk to John before or after the email, the original email that came out?
No, we did. We talk on Thursday. So the last time I interviewed John Gruden was on Thursday before what happened on Friday, and that was his last coach's show. And this week it was Rich Bisaccia picking it up, and he's the new head coach of the Silver and Black after a very emotional and a very difficult week for the Raider organization.
What is your personal relationship? And I'm assuming you do have one with John Gruden. I'm curious if you've spoken with him.
I haven't spoken with him, but I've been a longtime friend with John Gruden. Like Derek Carr and other people, we had the ultimate respect for him. He's done everything to enhance our lives and make our careers better. And we were shocked by this turn of events. We didn't know anything like that with his emails. We've never heard that tone from him ever. You heard that from Josh Jacobs, all of his coaches that he hired, including Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator, Bisaccia and the new head coach, Greg Olsen, the offensive coordinator. They all came up through Coach Gruden at some point or another. Coach Gruden had a tremendous head coaching tree, which includes Sean McVay, Mike Tomlin, and they all spoke and talked about how heartbroken and saddened they were. So everybody's in the same boat. No one knew what was coming. No one saw this coming. What the league did to the Raiders was despicable. The way they dropped this and the way they just dropped it only on John Gruden, considering there's 650,000 emails. And that's no defense for John Gruden. He was going to be gone no matter what. No one would ever survive this at any level in the NFL. So, you know, it's time to move on. There's a lot of football to be played. The Raiders are 3-2, and I got a big game coming up in Denver.
All right. Well, that was very strong there, JT. I guess let's hang out there for a second. What do you view as despicable specifically?
Guys, I'm not here to do a recap email. Come on. You know, I worked for the team. You read the emails. They were awful emails. They weren't what we thought about John Gruden or anybody else. They were leaked by the league, and no one condones the email. It checked off every box that would offend people, and everybody knows that. We're all big boys. We know what was in the emails. It was very unfortunate. And no one's condoning it. No one's condoning it, from the Raider organization to fans all over the country. So we're all aware of what happened here, and it was very unfortunate, especially if you're a part of the Raider Nation as a fan, member of the media, member of the coaching staff, and especially the players that got to go out and win a football game.
Is it, you know, I don't know what your opinion on it is, JT, but I'll run it past you. But from a Denver perspective, from our perspective, we look at this as a no-win situation for the Broncos, meaning, like, you got to be kidding me. You can't beat a team that is going through all this with the Raiders. Like, you got to win this game. And the Raiders, to me, it feels a little bit different. Like, winning this game is a bit of a hero's quest, but nobody would really hold it against them this week. Do you think I've got that vibe right?
From the Denver perspective, you do, not from the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders expect to win. They got a whole bunch of pros and a whole bunch of guys who have been preparing since they came back on Wednesday. We all know the elephant in the room. There's a coaching change. No matter what a team was going through, and this is very difficult from a media perspective, normally when a coach gets fired or resigns, it's at the end of the year, right? It's at the end of the year.
Sure.
That coach is going to be out, and then you wonder if that team is going to show up. I mean, for the Raiders, the Raiders had one of the toughest schedules in football right out of the gate and went 3-0 and proved themselves pretty early. Now they're fighting through injuries, and obviously the departure of Gruden is the biggest story in sports, so that's on the mind of all the players. But bigger problem is the offensive line that's injured, and now the second stringers are playing, and who's healthy or not, how they get the running game going, and what Carr does, because Gruden was always in his ear with every play. Unfortunately for Derek Carr, he has Greg Olsen and John Morton, two of the more experienced coordinators and offensive coaches in all of football, and they should be able to get him the game plan to go into Denver and win. I mean, 3 weeks ago, I thought the Raiders would beat the Broncos at this point. I'll stay with that out here in Vegas. But, yeah, it's going to be it's tough sledding when you have to go through this. No football team ever in the history of the NFL since leather helmets have ever had to prepare for a game under these circumstances. So I don't think it's going to define the season for the Raiders, but if the Raiders win this game and go to 4-2 and the Chargers lose at Baltimore, which we all hope they do, the Raiders are tied for first. So they got a lot to play, just like the Broncos do.
Well, I know Greg Olsen had the coordinator title, so maybe things won't change too much, but it seems like the biggest change has got to be offensively. Do you expect things to look any different on offense?
Yeah, I think I expect them to be more aggressive. You know, the criticism of the former staff led by John Gruden was they were too conservative. They ran it into the line of scrimmage. And as you guys have prepped for this game and watch what happened, Derek Carr was the AFC Offensive Player of the Month, not the week. He started off ahead of Brady and ahead of Rodgers and Mahomes as the MVP through three games. And we know that's not a whole season, but no one passed for more yardage than Carr and put up the numbers he put up through three games. And that was because he was attacking. That had nothing to do with the running game. They weren't running it well. They were just throwing constantly. And everyone in Raider Nation would like to see that happen again. The problem is last week's defense with the Chargers was the Vic Fangio defense. Mm-hmm. Last week, the loss to the Bears was the Vic Fangio defense. And now we're playing Vic Fangio. So we're seeing a defense 3 weeks in a row. And last week it was Khalil Mack and the front for Chicago that really gave the Raiders some problems. Now, you know, as we talked about it, and I talked about it with the new head coach, Rich Bisaccia, you have the most expensive and one of the highest acclaimed secondaries in football in the Broncos, and that's the problem, the back end. I mean, how much can Carr attack downfield against one of the best secondaries in all of football?
I have we have a bet amongst ourselves, JT, me and Tyler, about targets to Darren Waller. I've got the over on 12 and a hook. how do you think I'm looking?
I would hope that this game Waller would get a lot more touches because he had, I think, 19 in the first game. Right. I mean, they went to him on like first six or seven plays,
yeah,
and it was a really big deal. So I would hope that they go back to Waller a lot because Waller accomplishes two things, guys. First, he's explosive. He's one of the most athletic players you will ever see live. I mean, it's a gift from the NFL gods that they were able to get Waller the way they got him a couple of years ago. Now they got to use him, and a lot of teams want to take Waller out of the game. I'm sure Vic Fangio will and want to double-team him. The Raiders got to do a better job of lining up Waller wide in the slot, put him in motion so he can catch the ball, because I think the only chance the Raiders have to win this game is it's going to be the short passing game to Renfro, Waller, Ruggs. Guys got to catch balls on third and five, because I don't think the Raiders can run it on anything bigger than third and three, third and four, or third and five. So that short passing game is going to be critical, because I don't think this offensive line can hold up in a long passing attack where you got to give Carr extra time.
Give us the score, JT.
Oh, I love doing this. Raiders 24, Broncos 23. The Raiders do what they've done since the history of their team in 1960. Fly out of Denver with a victory and another great game under adversity. So you'll only hear me ever predict the Raider Nation to win. Sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong, but you know what you're getting from JT.
No doubt about it. Thank you, JT. We'll talk to you later.
That Take care,
great.
Guys.
Thanks.
Wow, JT drinking the Raider Kool-Aid, huh?
Woo.
Goodness gracious. JT had...
He was honest, though. He works for the team, and he's got personal relationships.
I get it. He works for the team, but you clearly know how the team feels about the situation.
Well, look what Mark Davis's comments were.
That's right.
When he... What was his... It wasn't, like, big apologetic. He was like, well, the NFL, you know, knows it all, so...
That's right. I mean, hey, Roger Goodell went after him for sure. Roger Goodell was going to make sure that these emails continued to get leaked until they had no choice but to remove John Gruden.
Right.
It's just amazing that that's the takeaway. I guess. I mean, I get it. You feel frustrated that you were the ones that got targeted. Well, you were the ones that had the coaches that sent the emails.
I tell you, JT is the best, though, man. And the text line is, you know, JT, man, I love talking to JT. Are you kidding me? He's one of my favorite parts.
Oh, he's got passion.
The guy's great. Okay. What is the story with the letter?
Well, you know, honestly,
you want to wait on that?
Well, yeah, I don't even really. I don't want to trade. That's like a hard transition into
all right,
that. That was a weird vibe coming out of JT.
All right.
Let's hang on to it. We'll get to it
right
when the vibe's a little different.
All right, well, I think everybody's fired up.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll stay there. It's KKFN and KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.